The meeting this afternoon of the House Committee on Education, our Subcommittee on Education Innovation. I thank all the people that are here. I don't know how long you've been waiting, but I'm sure you certainly look patient. We are going to hear two bills today, and because floor session ran over immensely, we would appreciate when people testify that you be very succinct, and because we want to hear everybody that has something to say so that all voices are listened to. So with that, I'm going to do a public hearing on House Bill 2629. And we're going to start out with an esteemed colleague, Senator Starr. Oh, first we're going to hear about the bill. Mr. Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2629 repeals examination requirements that apply to children who are taught by a private teacher, parent, or legal guardian, allows an exemption from compulsory school attendance laws for children taught at direction of a parent or legal guardian, declares an emergency, and is effective July 1st, 2007. Committee members, you have before you the staff measure summary as well as the text of Oregon Revised Statute 339.035, which is the part of the statute being repealed. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. If people probably haven't noticed already by now, I couldn't survive without Mr. Olson, so he's the one that helps take care of all of us. With that, Senator Starr, if you would enlighten us.
Well, thank you. For the record, I'm State Senator Bruce Starr from District 15 in Western Washington County, representing the citizens in Hillsborough, Cornelius, Forest Grove, North Plains. I appreciate the opportunity to testify this afternoon in support of House Bill 2629, and I can't agree more, Madam Chair, that staff in this building really, really, really are important, and I don't know how any of us could get anything done without the staff that so ably serve us. I appreciate time constraints that we're under today. I know how long bills on floors can go, and I appreciate you having a hearing on this bill. Really, I think it juxtaposed to the hearing we had a few days ago on other bills. I think, quite honestly, you'll have a number of folks that are behind me that testified on those bills, and I think we'll be happy to talk about House Bill 2629. Also, I just want to draw your attention to the legislators whose name appear at the top of this bill. You've got Republicans, you've got Democrats, members that represent diverse parts of Oregon that have signed on to under this bill. And for the most part, as I look at that list, these are members that have voted for a bill just like House Bill 2629 in previous legislative sessions. And I think the reason, the rationale for that is the fact that, again, as I talked about the other day, we do have a long history of homeschooling in Oregon. We have a long history of regulating homeschooling in Oregon. And I don't know that I can replicate my testimony from the other day, but it is a situation where we have moms and dads who are willing to sacrifice their lives and pour their lives into their children. And as I talked about the other day, how great is that? And how amazing is that? And the data and the statistics about how well these kids do speaks for itself. And you'll have moms and dads that will testify to their own experiences educating their children. In some respects, it's a balance between whose kids are these and who's ultimately responsible for the success or failure of children in Oregon. And a number, you know, the vast majority of moms and dads in Oregon delegate that responsibility to their local community schools. And that's why we, in this building, work overtime to make sure that we provide on the public side the best education we possibly can for the vast majority of moms and dads who send their kids to public schools. Obviously, there's another segment of the population that moms and dads send their kids to private and parochial schools. And then there's the smallest slice of that pie are the moms and dads that take on this responsibility themselves and don't delegate it to anybody and really accept that responsibility of rearing, raising, and educating their kids themselves. And I just encourage you to listen with open ears, open hearts to the testimony that you're going to hear this afternoon as it relates to this bill. I encourage you to take that testimony and vote to move this bill forward to the full House. I understand the legislative history, again, of this particular bill and the fact that the governor that sits in the center office is the same governor that vetoed a similar bill not too long ago. Mm-hmm. But, again, I just think it's important that we recognize families that take on this important responsibility and educate their kids themselves. They've paid their dues. The data speaks for itself. And I think it's an appropriate step for the legislature to take to continue to relax the rules and regulations under which they have so ably performed. So with that, Madam Chair, like you, my schedule has been compressed, and I've got meetings that I'm missing to testify. So if with your permission, I'll excuse myself from the committee room.
Thank you, Senator Starr. Any questions briefly before Senator leaves?
Thank you so very much.
Move forward. Yes, go in God's graces. We have Kevin Sterrett. If you'd come forth and share your thoughts and reflections also.
For the record, members of the committee, Chair Comp, my name is Kevin Sterrett. I'm the director of the Home Education Liberty Project, and Senator Starr covered the principal point that I wanted to make, and there will be others here who I think will give you far more detailed and technical reasons why this bill is a good idea. Our position is simply that parents who homeschool, as Senator Starr said, have demonstrated and proven their point. And since they take the complete responsibility for the education of their children, including all the expenses and all of the time, and they know their children best, they are the best equipped to decide when, how, and where they should be tested. And ultimately, it is our belief that these children are not the product of the state. They are products of their parents. And this bill simply recognizes their authority and responsibility.
Committee, any questions for Mr. Sterrett? He's very succinct.
Very succinct.
Well, I got more than one sentence this time. Which
That's right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We have a panel that would like to bring up all together, and I'm going to have Mr. Olson just call all of you here together.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Roger Williams, Amy Grant, Dr. Brian Ray, and Dorothy Carmen, please. You can pull another chair up if you'd like to fit, or one can rotate up. Thank you.
They're hooked together. They get them pulled.
Oh, she's...
She did.
She's
down, right?
She's good. And if you want to... Does anybody... I mean, it's okay if you just go ahead and start? Okay.
Chair Comp and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Dorothy Carmen. I appreciate very much you hearing this bill for us today.
Dorothy, you can't have more than one sentence, too.
Thank you. I'm afraid I do. My testimony is being handed out, but I'm not going to read it, so I hope that you get a chance to soon. My husband and I are founding members of the Oregon Christian Home Education Association Network. The primary purpose of our ministry is to equip, encourage, and support home educating families in Oregon, particularly Christian home educating families. But one of the ways that we end up having to support those families is by defending their right to homeschool in Oregon. In that effort, we are pleased to be joined by our non-sectarian counterpart, the Oregon Home Education Network. My husband and I have been coming to these hearings and in the legislature and lots of meetings with the Department of Education for the last 22 years. And it's no easier to give testimony today than it was when I first started. Every legislative session, home educators have had to defend our freedom to homeschool, just like we did a couple weeks ago before this committee. And we spent many, many hours at the Department of Education making sure that the rules carry out the intent, at least from our perspective, of the legislation that had been passed. That's why in 1999, when we presented the same bill virtually that's before you today, we accepted the compromises that we worked out with the Department of Education and the governor's office, and the governor eventually signed it into law. The reason we did that was because the 1999 law, which we are currently under now, gave much less leeway to the Department of Education as far as changing the rules, changing the cutoff points, and so on. That's why there's so much detail in the current statute. Now, it might sound impressive that I've been around for long working for Home Education Freedom. I'm primarily here today as a veteran homeschool mom. I started homeschooling in 1983, and I've homeschooled under three different homeschool laws. I'm very, very thankful that I've had the opportunity to homeschool my children. But I'm done, so why am I here? Because I'm a grandma. And I want my grandchildren to have the maximum amount of freedom to homeschool. Now, I'm going to be skipping, just doing the highlights. Oh, thank you. The highlights of the testimony that's been handed out to you. More than 20 years of state oversight and testing in Oregon have shown clearly that home education is a highly effective educational alternative that produces sound results. Acknowledging this success, House Bill 2629 removes mandatory notification and testing requirements. Why should you support House Bill 2629? First one, home education is private education, the privatest of education you can get. Just coined a word. It's not public education. And therefore, we shouldn't be under the authority and supervision of the superintendent of public instruction. That's her title. Standardized tests don't measure individualized education. And home education is extremely individualized, tailor-made education. For more than 20 years, tests have proven that home educators do a good job. It's time to stop requiring home educators to prove that homeschooling works. Dr. Ray will be able to share a great deal of his research that proves that home education works. Home educators bear the financial burden for their children's education, including their testing. And Senator Starr alluded to this already. It's time to stop requiring home educators to bear the additional burden of proving that home education works through testing. But not only is testing burdensome, you've got single-income families and often very large families, and they have the additional burden of providing their own schooling curriculum, but the additional burden of testing. So we believe that testing is not only burdensome, it is pointless. It really doesn't provide us as home educators any beneficial knowledge to know that our child scored at a certain percentile. We do constant feedback with our children. We measure them against lists of essential learning objectives. We grill them over the chapter that they've just studied over dinner. We have them do the chapter tests. We are constantly getting feedback and assessing how our children are doing. So the standardized achievement tests do not help us in any way. But the state also receives little help from the information in the tests. In 1999, which is the last year that the state had actually collated all the information for homeschoolers that it had been gathering, the ESDs, to whom we are responsible, used the test to identify 5 students which they required to return to the classroom. 5 students that the law said you're not quite making the grade on. The ESDs, to the best of our estimation, spend about $500,000 in staff time a year to keep track of homeschoolers. And with the changes in the 1999 law, I doubt that any homeschoolers are caught. There are provisions for homeschoolers to homeschool with the help of a private service provider that helps with the special needs students, or through the individualized education plan through the public school. So students that need help have ways to get it under the 1999 homeschool law. It's time to free up the money that the ESDs have to spend to be used to be able to help schools in the public school system. House Bill 2629, as mentioned, removes both notification and testing requirements for homeschoolers. This puts us on a par with private education in Oregon. Private schools do not have to notify anybody, parents of kids in the private schools. Those names don't have to be sent to the state anywhere. So that child is not being looked after by the Department of Education. And neither does the private school have to turn any testing into the state. This bill would put homeschools on a par with private school. These changes are also in keeping with U.S. Supreme Court decisions regarding parental rights to direct their children's education, and I included quite a few of them in the testimony. I'd only like to highlight a couple. In this 1923 decision, Meyer versus Nebraska, the U.S. Supreme Court held that the liberty protected by the Due Process Clause, the 14th Amendment, includes the right of parents to control the education of their own. 2 years later, in Pierce versus Society of Sisters, the court ruled that the fundamental theory of liberty upon which all governments in this union repose excluded any general power of the state to standardize its children by forcing them to accept instruction from public teachers only. And this is the part I'd really like to emphasize. The child is not the mere creature of the state. Those who nurture him and direct his destiny have the right and a high duty to recognize and prepare him for additional obligations. Senator Starr brought up this point already in testimony. Whose children are these? And I'd like to even take off my hat as a representative of the Oregon Christian Home Education Association Network and speak to you as a parent and a mom. I read in Psalm, and I just want to say right off the top, this does not represent the views of all homeschoolers. This is my private views. I read in Psalm 127 this morning, "Lo, children are a gift from the Lord." And I truly, truly believe that. In the Gospels, Jesus was asked a question. Should we pay taxes to Caesar? Of course, Judea was occupied at that time, and they didn't want to have to pay taxes to this occupying power. And so Jesus held up a coin and said, "Whose image do you see on here?" And the Pharisees had to say, "Caesar's image." And he says, "Well, render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's." Well, it's very fitting parable to talk about today, as we have to render to Caesar our taxes today. But the rest of that verse goes on to say, render to God the things that are God's. And I look at the faces of my children and my grandchildren. I don't see Caesar's face on there. I don't see the state of Oregon's face on their faces. I see God's face. They're made in the image of God. And it's my duty and high responsibility as a parent to train them for God and to prepare them for their future stations as not only citizens of this earth, not only citizens of Oregon, but citizens of a heavenly sphere. And so that's why I'm so passionate about the freedom to homeschool as we feel led to teach our children. It may not look exactly like the public school education. It doesn't. It's more, much, much more of a discipleship kind of walking alongside, being mentored by your parents. That's what homeschooling looks like. It's not just another alternative to education. It's a discipleship program. And that's true whether or not the family is a Christian or is Jewish or Muslim or non-religious. Homeschooling provides the one-on-one mentoring, walking alongside of kind of education that I believe many teachers in the public schools would just drool to be able to do.
Dorothy, could you kind of summarize the rest of
yes,
your testimony, please?
I will, gladly.
Thank you.
That was the main point I wanted to make.
Okay.
That there are other questions that I ask in my testimony, but I just want to sum up saying that home educators in Oregon are asking the legislature to recognize that homeschools are not public schools. They're the most private of private schools. And since the 1985 law was enacted, we have demonstrated that homeschoolers do a good job teaching their children, that home education works very well. This method of education more than meets the state's compelling interest in children's education. Home education freedom works. Please vote for House Bill 2629.
Thank you.
Madam Chair and committee members, my name is Brian Ray. I'm sorry, was I supposed to wait to be called?
Nope, you go right ahead, Dr. Ray.
Sorry.
I just wanted to call you Dr.
Trying to keep it moving. Okay, all right. And I am born and raised Oregonian. I still live here in Oregon. My PhD is in science education from Oregon State, my master's in zoology from Ohio University, my bachelor's in science and biology from University of Puget Sound, my teaching certificate from Oregon State University.
You can tell you're in good company here.
Okay. A lot of colors up here, yeah.
Yeah, Oregon State
Day. The Beavers, yeah. Okay, so I've been doing research on homeschooling for about 23 years, and I've been testifying in courts and legislatures across the country. I've taught at the graduate level, the undergraduate level in sciences and education. I've taught teachers. I've supervised teachers. I've taught in public school classrooms and in private school classrooms, and I've taught homeschooled children. So that's a little bit of background on some of the context from which I come. I want to give you a brief survey of research on homeschooling. I know some of you have heard that before, but I want to relate it specifically to this bill. And I would really, in some ways, rather talk about the philosophy, but I'll tear myself away from that for a minute. Okay, so here we go. On the academic achievement of homeschooled children, in study after study after study, when I talk about research, it's done by many people, many professors, many graduate students, and myself. I've probably done more studies than anybody, but I'm talking about the whole of the research. Homeschooled children on average score 15 to 30 percentile points above the national average in public schools on standardized academic achievement tests such as the California and the Stanford and Iowa test of basic skills. Now, a lot of people will say, well, all right, but what about this group or that group? And I want to point this out for a minute. You look at lower income families, homeschooled children from those families, on average, are above average. Children from families with parents who have lower than average formal education, the homeschooled children score on average above average. And children from minority families, we have only a little tiny bit of research on this, but on average, above average. So it's not just the white, upper-middle-class kinds of people that we're talking about here. Another group, the special needs in terms of learning disabled disabilities, on average are outperforming children who have special needs in public schools with certified teachers. Another group, the talented and gifted special needs children, on average are doing better than they would in classes for those children with certified teachers in public schools. So I'm just trying to give you a flavor that it's not just a certain slice of the homeschool pie that's doing well academically. Now, let me go on to another aspect related to academic achievement, and this one is very important related to this bill. Across the nation, there are many people who have the idea that if we could only control something more, as in the state could control something more, it would be better. Now, I'm not waiting for you to laugh about that, but the evidence when it comes to education is just the opposite. On academic achievement, when I've divided out the high state control states of homeschooling, middle control states of homeschooling, and low control states on homeschooling, no difference in academic achievement of the children who are homeschooled. Okay, that's research that I've done. Another study, that's on academic achievement. Another study is currently being worked on by Dr. Bruce Eagleson in Pennsylvania and myself, looking at SAT scores, the college aptitude type tests. We're finding the same exact thing. No difference between the high, medium, and low control states on the scores on SAT. And then another study, general research on educational freedom. It's called the Educational Freedom Index. And this is not just a study on homeschooling, but the finding is that the higher the educational freedom, the more choice, the less state control, the higher the academic achievement of children in general, K through 12 across the United States of America. So that's really important to kind of get this in perspective. The next piece of area of research is the kind of what homeschoolers would call the S question. What about socialization? And it's, in a way, it's the one that a lot of people don't want to talk about, but they're kind of thinking when they're thinking the state needs to get involved. A lot of people just don't want to admit it. But the research, again, shows, on average, the homeschooled children are doing better, developing better socially, emotionally, and psychologically than those in institutional schools, whether you're looking at self-esteem, self-concept, family cohesion, interactions with people in play, and all those kinds of things. The homeschooled children are doing as well and typically better. So, next area. What about the real world of adulthood? And it's just in the last few years that we've actually been able to do some of this research, because the modern homeschool movement is just now old enough to have enough people in their adulthood who were home educated. And this is really where, I suppose, the rubber hits the road, so to speak, because many negative critics, theoretical negative critics of homeschooling, were saying, yeah, but, you know, it's kind of different, it's kind of weird, they're going to come out strange, they're going to be isolated, they're going to be selfish, so forth and so on. And what we actually are finding in the research is that adults who are home educated are more involved in local community service, they're more civically engaged than the national average, they go on to college at a little higher rate, and they finish college a little faster rate.
They vote more. They boycott and protest more. They contribute more to political campaigns. They write letters to the editor and legislators more often than the national average. So that's just a little thumbnail sketch of the research. Now, very closely related to the research and this bill then is the issue of what are the what is the scientific evidence, if anything, that the current bill should have ever been passed, and whether it has any deficiencies, and whether this the bill that we're looking at right now, House Bill 2629, should be passed. And it's relatively simple. Professional standards by groups such as the American Educational Research Association, the American Psychological Association, and National Testing and Measurement tell us, if you randomly selected a panel of 10 of those folks and said, look at the Oregon state law or other laws like it in the nation, does it follow sound research findings and methodology and what should be done with test scores? And they'd have to tell you absolutely not. Because, as we know, a lot of times laws are passed for political reasons, not for scientific or necessarily philosophical reasons. It is the improper use of a percentile test score to use as a cutoff and make major decisions in a person's life. Secondly, and this is both research and its logic, if a state like Oregon is going to use a cutoff points, let's just make up a number, 25th percentile, and say if you score below this percentile, say twice in a row, we will force you to attend a conventional institutional school, then you'd have to use the same rationale with those in government-run schools, public schools, and say if you score below this point 2 years in a row, you will then be required, forced by state authority, to attend private school or be homeschooled. But we know that's not done. And researchers, if you just ask them, try to be like Dr. Spock and say, what's the proper and equitable way to do things here? It would not be this use of the scores. Next point, and I will be wrapping up. She's watching me. I always get that sense.
Yeah, you've got the teacher look.
All right. In research design, and anybody who's studied research a little bit knows that you need to at least have a correlation, a mathematical pattern, to even consider that there's a cause and effect relationship. And I've explained to you the research. And some people would say, well, I remember this cartoon, well, there's a stack of evidence about homeschooling that says all these positive things. And there's another desk that has nothing on it about the bad effects or the negative effects of homeschooling. And some people say, well, Brian, you know, you've been in this, you know, what are you hiding? I'm not hiding anything. This is what's been done in research in the last 25 years. It's all we have. In fact, I've been on panels with professors to say, well, you must be hiding something. We're not. With no correlation, you cannot talk about causation. So it is both scientifically and logically wrong to therefore say, well, we need to have more law, or we need to keep this law to control homeschooling so they do better, and we catch the person falling through the cracks. It doesn't work. There's not even a correlation. And now I will wrap it up. The evidence is consistent that homeschooled children, on average, do better than average. The evidence is very consistent that probabilistically, if you take a child who's scoring, let's say, below average, let's just say the 30th percentile, or even the 12th percentile, and put him then in an institutional school, he will do worse, probabilistically. So if you want to just go by, hey, what kind of logic sense, you know, probabilistically, it's actually a bad move to say you will now go to conventional school. It's presuming some things. It's assuming some things. And it does not, the law that we have does not take into account 27 years of research. The law that's before you, 2629, does. And it essentially says there's no evidence that control by the state improves learning or catches children who might not learn otherwise. And therefore, 2629 should be passed. Secondly, and I can't leave without mentioning it, and this actually is related to research in a way, House Bill 2629 recognizes that the default setting in any nation that considers itself a free nation, and in any nation that considers itself a progressive place, or a state such as Oregon that considers itself a progressive place, in a sense basing its laws on metaphysical naturalism rather than theism, which I don't believe in. I believe in the latter, not the former, would say that the default setting is freedom first. And then you would have to have overwhelming evidence, empirical evidence, to control people with a law such as the one we already have. Therefore, House Bill 2629 should be passed.
Thank you, Dr. Gray. Committee We have one person that has to leave, and Representative, you have a comment?
Well, I would just want to thank the chair and the chair of the full committee for hearing this bill. I think if this audience needs to be congratulated on their commitment to their children and to their children's education. And I've watched this debate for a long time. I've been in the building about 22 years. And so we've had the opportunity to watch these discussions every session. And I applaud you for staying at the helm. I'm a grandma. And so I share your interest as well, making sure that Oregon provides many options and allows the parent to indeed choose the best structure for their child. So thank you for being down here today. And with that, I have to thank you. Thank you very much.
Mr. Williams.
Chair Connell, members of the committee, I'm Roger Williams, OSHA Network Legislative Coordinator. And first of all, I want to thank you, Chair Connell, and you, Representative Buckley, for letting us hear this bill. I'd like to talk about three points today. The fallacy behind the present homeschool law, how the present system harms many home-educated students, and the state's discrimination against home educators. I'll do it nicely. First, the present homeschool law is based on the idea that low-achieving home-educated students would do better in a public school. The state mandated testing is designed to find those low achievers and put them in public schools if necessary. That's the logic of the present law. But the benefits of home education occur no matter what the starting achievement level of the student. There is no reason to believe that the group remaining at the low end of the achievement spectrum somehow missed out on the benefits of home education. The state of Oregon cannot even tell whether, on balance, students who were remanded to public school in the past were actually helped or harmed. I personally asked the Department of Education about this. They don't track such things. Second, mandatory testing hurts many home-educated students. This is because parents are forced to misdirect their teaching energies into meeting the state's short-term requirements. And this, any teacher on the panel will know I'm talking exactly right. Rather than concentrating on what is best for the individual student's long-term educational good. In our family, we had to expend considerable resources and effort to just keep our son above the 15th percentile flunking cutoff point. Resources that would have been better spent in a less stressful long-term program, which we were simultaneously trying to maintain. But as it was, the short-term threat regularly displaced the longer-term goal. This was damaging to my son's educational progress. Fortunately, he's been able to turn it around, but that damage was there. Third, home-educated students who score low are handled very differently from public school dropouts. When a home-educated student scores low, he's forced out of his home school, where he's likely still getting some education, into a public school. On the other hand, when public school students drop out, stopping their education, they are allowed to just leave. Now, I know there's a process, but in fact, they actually just leave. The handout from the Department of Education publications shows the various reasons they are allowed to leave. Second page here. I'll just name some of them. Substance abuse, lack of parental support for education, dysfunctional home life, working more than 15 hours a week, obligations to support family, too far behind in credits to catch up. Now, picture this. Homeschooler. Truant officer shows up on the door, on the doorstep. Homeschool parent. You know, we've got problems here. We've got some substance abuse, and frankly, we don't support the education, and we don't get along too well here in the family. Oh, and Johnny works 20 hours a week. You're an officer. Wow, I didn't realize that. Please pardon me for bothering you. That's not what happens to homeschool parents. That's what happens to public school families. Yeah. Any home educating family using those excuses would be criminally prosecuted for educational neglect. Homeschool dropouts are not allowed in the state of Oregon. To add insult to injury, the public, and I want to say this gently, although I used a strong word. To add insult to injury, the public school dropout problem is a torrent, percentage-wise, to their population, compared with those home-educated students who may fall through the cracks. 13.7% of public schools who walk into a high school will drop out, according to the Oregon Department of Education spreadsheet figures I've given you, and that's on that's actually on this page here. This is the only place I could find it. It's in a spreadsheet on their website, right there. 13.7% drop out between in grades 9 through 12, and that doesn't include those who drop out before they walk into grade 9. They've got a separate spreadsheet for those folks. And I say that gently, and I'm going to say that that's not the public school's fault, and the last page here shows why. This is historically how much of the population has had a high school diploma. This is the Oregon figures. It's around 70%. If you look at the other side of that page, the national figures, and Oregon isn't out of line here, the national figures is about 70% too. So the point isn't that those nasty public school people are losing all those students. The point is that the state of Oregon, when a homeschooler falls into that category, treats us differently, treats us harshly. That's my problem with the current law. This is unequal protection under the law, pure and simple. We ask you to act to correct this injustice by passing HB 2629 so that we aren't persecuted as we are now. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. Ms. Grant? Or is it Mrs. Grant?
Thank you, Chair Tom. Interestingly
enough, Mr. Williams, we have a bill following this about dropouts.
I saw that. I'd like to address my comments to the issue of children falling through the cracks, because in speaking with educators and legislators, that seems to be the overriding concern with this bill, is that somehow if we remove mandated notification and testing, that will increase children that are falling through the cracks. So I'd like to talk a little bit about who is it that is falling through the cracks in Oregon. About 1.4% of children in 2005 were the subject of substantiated reports of child abuse and child neglect. Of those, nearly two-thirds were from birth to age 7. Less than one-third were in school age, in the age of covered by the current homeschool law.
Ms. Grant?
Yes.
I forgot to ask you to state your name for the record.
I'm sorry. My name is Amy Grant.
Thank you.
And I'm with the Oregon Home Education Network.
Thank you.
Thank you. So of the 1.5% of children in the state of Oregon, two-thirds were below the age that the current homeschool law even addresses, and less than one-third were in the age range that are currently addressed. Where do those reports of child abuse and child neglect come from? 83% come from sources other than teachers. So they come from community members, from relatives, from neighbors, from doctors, from police officers, from mental health professionals, from child care providers. They come from all of these people that homeschool children are interacting with. I think some of the research that Dr. Ray has done that I don't think he mentioned today was that on average, home-educated children participate in more than 5 outside activities on a regular basis. Scouts, 4-H, music classes, Sunday school, you know, whatever it is that they're doing. I know I spend more time in my car than I want to think about because we're doing car schooling rather than homeschooling. So home-educated children are in the community more so than children who are in a classroom all day. Home-educated children actually interact with more community members on an average day, on an average week, than children in the classroom. So what I'm trying to point out is there's no, when you think about children who fall through the cracks, you have to look at what are the causes of those children, where are they falling through the cracks, and how can we help those children? And I want to suggest that standardized testing doesn't reach them, doesn't cover them, and doesn't do anything to help them. So using this law to help children falling through the cracks is saying, when all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. We have more tools than this particular hammer. And this particular hammer hitting that nail isn't helping the kids over here that are falling through the cracks. So the kids that are falling through the cracks are falling through the cracks because of dysfunctional families, because of substance abuse, because of mental health, or because of parental neglect. I mean, because parents don't care. Parents that don't care don't want their kids at home. Parents that don't care are going to find other options for their kids. What I would like to suggest is if you really want to help those kids that are falling through the cracks, and I think even 1.4% is too much, we need to fund Head Start. We need to fund school programs like the Community Transitional School, I think it is in Portland, that help homeless kids. We need to make access to health care. We need to address the issues that cause them to fall through the cracks. And it's not lack of standardized testing. My daughter's in college. My son is approaching college. Like Dorothy, sometimes I wonder, why do I still care? Why am I still fighting this fight? It's because I continue to believe that private education, and home education in particular, is the crucible for education innovation. And I'd like to quote a very wise educator who said, "The freedom to express dissent against our government, including in the education of our children, is part of what keeps our public system strong. We need home education freedom, and I encourage you to vote for Senate Bill 2629. And I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have."
Thank you. Who's the author? Who did you quote?
It's Representative Cannon.
Representative.
You saw that coming.
Yeah, like a truck coming down the road to get me. Go ahead, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate a lot of the logic in this series of presentations, and certainly can understand and appreciate the degree to which testing is a blunt way to try to preserve our children's educational experiences. There's some things about the analogy or the comparison of private schools and homeschooling that makes me a little bit uncomfortable. When we heard both the private school and homeschooling bill a couple of weeks ago, it was pointed out to us that the lack of regulation of, or that private schools are sort of regulated, if you will, by the marketplace. You know, if they're doing a very poor job educationally, it's unlikely that many students and their families will choose to enroll there. That they are very often accredited, and so there's that layer of oversight, even though the state isn't taking a role in it. And I think the concern expressed rather bluntly or poorly through this section of statute that you're suggesting we repeal is for kids who are slipping through the cracks, not only in terms of the abuse situation that you're describing, but also just educationally slipping through the cracks. Mm-hmm. So what, in the absence of testing, which I agree with you is not a very good way to get at it, what can we do? What can the public do to assure that there aren't kids slipping through educational cracks? And your testimony about the success of homeschooling is very compelling, but again, we don't know what this percentage is that might be just not schooled well, not schooled at all by their families.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you for your concern, Representative Cannon. And I'm sorry that I didn't ask your permission to use the quote. Yeah. I thought it was a delightful quote. The Oregon Department of Education has 14 years of annual standardized tests for homeschoolers from 1985 to 1999. Home education is private education. We are specifically exempted from the No Child Left Behind. We provide this education on our own dollar, on our own time. With that 14 years of information, I believe that there is, we've already proven that home education is an effective means of education, that the average, and anytime you use standardized testing, it's to look at averages. Our average performance is substantially higher than that of public schools. And frankly, when the public school system has 14 years of standardized test scores that exceed the 14 years of homeschool test scores, I'd be happy to talk with you about educational quality.
I'm going to ask that that be the response because we have one more bill to hear today now. So, okay. Well, we could continue this if we need to, but Representative Flores, we'd have to, I want to converse with her a little bit. Go ahead, Representative Dahlin.
Yeah, I want to see if I can help Representative Cannon. In 25 years as a superintendent, I actively went after homeschool students. And in my first years, a little green and a little novice, I was under the assumption that they ought to be in my school so that I could handle their education appropriately. But what I found in the remaining 15 years was one student. And I made it a point to visit every homeschooler I could find. I will never imply no more. I did find a homeschooler that was chopping wood and making fence posts. And when I talked to his dad, I said, I think this young man belongs in school. And he said, the young man will be in school as soon as he learns the lessons of the forest. And when I did get him in school, he ended up being an all-state athlete. He had a part in a movie. He was a West Point appointee. He was our valedictorian. He became the governor's legislative liaison. He was a smoke jumper. In fact, the last guy out of the California fire alive. And that's the only one I found. So I want to, what I'm trying to do with anecdotal evidence is demonstrate after 15 years of thoroughly searching, I found all sorts of tacts, all sorts of approaches, but mostly what I found were the kind of kids I wanted in my school for the record they were producing.
Thank you. And Representative Roebling, briefly?
Am I only short?
I know you will be.
What this law does, besides addressing the rights for homeschoolers, and I'm one of those people who applaud a lot of homeschooling. I think it's a great thing. But what it does is it really effectively says there's no compulsory attendance laws in the state of Oregon. And that's another one of the court cases that was not mentioned that came out of Oregon that said that the state does have an interest in children up through the 8th grade or 16 years of age. And the laws that were mentioned with regard to the dropout, available times for dropout, are all things that are applicable after that period of time. There is no statutory okay for letting people drop out before that grade because of the compulsory attendance laws. And I contend that there are some people who are neglectful parents who, rather than get involved in homeschooling, just submit to that and go through the school. And we have a chance to work with those kids, and they are successful. I am concerned about some of those kids. I am not concerned about the kids and any of the parents that are here. I have absolutely no concern. I will tell you that right off the bat. And I have, as a principal in high school, lots of great people who I thought did an exceptional job homeschooling their parents and their kids. I have no problem with that at all. But I do have a concern that we do have an obligation, the Supreme Court has said we do, to deal with the kids up to that point of the period of time. And so for that point, how do you address that? How do we say to a whole bunch of kids that the Supreme Court has said, yes, you have this interest, and now you're abdicating that to good and bad parents, and all of a sudden this test, I agree, that's a blunt instrument in order to figure out this issue. How do we go about assuring that we are doing what we're told through the Supreme Court, through all this kind of stuff? How do we live up to that obligation to those kids?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, part of the written testimony that I provided, I've done an analysis of the home education laws in all 50 states and the District of Columbia. Oregon is in the minority in that it requires substantive state oversight of home-educated children. 26 states and the District of Columbia require no substantive oversight, in other words, oversight of the academic progress of those children. We're actually behind the curve on this one rather than ahead of it. When I then looked at those states that had substantive oversight and the states that did not have a substantive oversight, I looked at what percentage of their children are enrolled in school. There is no difference. So to try to say that removing substantive oversight from home-educated children will eliminate compulsory attendance goes against all the data from all the states that have no substantive oversight of home education. So it's just not happening. And to your question, I am not saying that there are no tools to reach neglectful parents. I think that there are tools to reach neglectful parents. I think it's in the child welfare laws and the child welfare system. And that's how we reach, regardless of whether those children are home educated, private schooled, or in public schools, those are the tools. And that those are where we need to focus the resources to find and help those children.
Could I give one quick response to that?
Only if you ask Mr. Williams, because I was going to let him have the final closing comment.
Go ahead.
Yeah, very briefly, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Williams.
Back to Representative Cannon's question. Last time I mentioned the social force that protects children. That's grandma. Grandma is the ultimate judge of educational progress. I don't mean just grandma. I mean relatives, neighbors, friends, Sunday school teachers, whatever. They will notice. They will notice if Johnny can't write, if Johnny can't read. That's the real safety net. This testing by the state is not a safety net. You know why? Because a parent that's not going to do the job, either if they don't know what they're doing, not doing the job, their support around them, their family, will solve the problem. If they really know that they're neglecting their children, they won't register. It's that simple. You will not catch them. You will never know they're there.
Thank you, Mr. Lynch.
I just want to make one comment to that one, because I agree with you, and that's one of the things that makes it hard for me. I have a couple grandparents who are very upset with their kids because they are not doing what they've reported to every agency, but the kids continue to do over 15%, and so there's nothing they can do about it. And it's it is really sad. They're imploring me to put more restrictions so that they have more control over that. So I agree with you. They're out there watching their grandkids, but some are not getting any report, any help with that. And I feel bad about that, but it's true.
And I really want to thank you, because you're doing an outstanding job, and I know you are. So thank you. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2629. And at this time, I'm going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 3142. Mr. Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3142 directs school districts to conduct exit interview with any high school student who is contemplating dropping out of school, requires a parent or guardian and student to sign a form prior to dropping out, directs the Department of Education to develop an informational handout and form to be used by school district, declares an emergency effective July 1st, 2007. This has a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. And committee, I believe this bill has merit, and I certainly wanted to at least have a representative of Flores to give her voice and share her thoughts.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, members of the committee. First, for the record, my name is Linda Flores. I'm state representative for House District 51, which is Clackamas, Damascus, Boring, Estacada, parts of Beaver Creek, parts of Oregon City, and I could go on. However, I know we have limited time.
Yeah, Representative Roblin,
we need to turn the room.
Yeah, okay. Representative Roblin just thinks she has to have a committee today.
I know. I've served on a committee with him. I totally get it. Committee members and Madam Chair, this bill is very timely considering Oregon's latest dropout figures were just released a couple of weeks ago. The good news is the dropout rate fell to 4.1% for the 2005-06 school year, down from 7.4% a decade ago. The bad news is the total number of students dropping out of high school in Oregon was 7,397, up by a total of 60 students from the year before. And one other thing to keep in mind, the dropout rate is very controversial in many education circles, as I'm sure you know. The National Governors Association has convinced most states to switch to a standardized system so that the state would divide the number of students graduating with a diploma by the number who entered ninth grade 4 years earlier. Once all the states switch over to that system, the dropout rate will probably be closer to 20 to 30%. In fact, according to a report by the Oregon Department of Education earlier this month, the graduate rate in our state is around 82%. So that would lead you to believe that there are about 18% not graduating. In any event, I don't want to spend a lot of time on debating how we calculate the problem, because that is a long conversation for another day. Instead, I want to touch on a bigger issue on what we could and possibly should be doing about the problem. And let me shift just for a moment from the state level to the national level. And many of you might be familiar with a very comprehensive study commissioned by the Gates Foundation and conducted by Civic Enterprises last year. And, Madam Chair, if you're interested, I will make a copy of this available to your administrator for copying and distribution to your committee. It's called The Silent Epidemic, Perspectives on High School Dropouts. Before I give you some of the findings of the report, I just thought it was, the executive summary starts out with this statement, and which I think is very informative. The central message of this report is that while some students drop out because of significant academic challenges, most dropouts are students who could have and believe they should have succeeded in school. Most of the students themselves believe they could have and should have succeeded in school. Some of the findings are pretty startling, so I'll just run through about five of them for you. Nearly a third of all public high school students don't graduate. I think we've heard that many times over, and that is pretty startling to think about. 90% of dropouts had passing grades when they left, and actually most of those kids had high grades when they left. Even with a heavy emphasis on education reform in recent years, many experts believe the dropout problem will increase substantially through the years 2020 unless we make significant improvements. Dropouts earn, on average, $9,200 less per year than graduates, which adds up over a lifetime to a loss of $1 million. And I'm probably not telling you anything you don't know. But I think it bears repeating. Dropouts are more likely to be unemployed, living in poverty, getting welfare, and other public assistance in prison, unhealthy, divorced, and single parents who raise children who also drop out of high school. It's continuing a cycle that needs to be broken. But the impact also spreads to the community at large with a loss of productive workers, less tax revenue because these earnings are down, and higher costs for social services and incarceration. So what do we do about all this? First, let me say there are many good dropout recovery programs in school districts around Oregon. I see House Bill 3142 as another way to supplement what we're already doing at the local level. House Bill 3142 does five things. Any high school student who's thinking about dropping out has to go through an exit interview, probably with a high school counselor or principal. The school district will give the student information regarding the consequences of dropping out of school. I'm sure it would include many of the issues that I've already referenced. Third, before they actually drop out, the student and their parent or guardian has to sign a form saying they understand the consequences and specifying that the parent or guardian has given their permission for the student to drop out. The Civic Enterprises report found only 40% of parents of dropouts were involved in their child's education. Have we heard recently about the lack of involvement in parents in their children's educational lives? And half of that group only because they were brought in for disciplinary reasons. 68% of the dropout students surveyed said their parents became more involved only when they found out their child was about to drop out. Fourth, the Oregon Department of Education would create a handout that school districts can use to explain the consequences to students. And fifth, local school districts must notify the Department of Education when a student under 18 drops out of high school. That way the state can keep track of these students. The bill was modeled after a successful program getting rave reviews in Indiana. Over the past couple of years, Indiana has enacted a series of measures to try to get a handle on their dropout rate, which was 72% in 2005. Their graduation rate has come up somewhat since then, but we don't have the most recent figures. Indiana enacted a law which, among other things, requires students to get their parents' permission before they drop out, talk to the principal about the consequences, and as part of their exit interview, sign an acknowledgement form. If they drop out without going through all those steps, they risk losing their work permit or their driver's license. Indiana State Representative Luke Messer said, "This idea that dropping out at 16 makes any sense is really decades out of date. In today's world, if you don't have a high school diploma, you're setting yourself up for failure. This is not only a way to hold students accountable, and students, according to this report, want to be held accountable. But also the school administrators, they would have to take a little more ownership in the total number of dropouts and maybe take more personal interest in the individual students who are dropping out and maybe looking at some of the reasons why so they can possibly fix those problems, as well as involving the parents in their children's lives." Madam Chair, members of the committee, that's a quick and dirty summary. I know this is not scheduled for a work session, but I hope that you will give it favorable consideration to potentially move it there, and I would be happy to answer any questions, but I know Representative Boquist is breaking down the door.
Yes, I know he is. Representative Dahlem, and I'm being generous.
Yes, I know you are, but you're always generous with me. Thank you. I see a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. In your research, did any of the other states incur any cost in this?
You know, thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Dahlem, for the question. I don't have any statistics on costs incurred by school districts at that point, but we can do a little deeper check for you and get that information for you.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Well, thank you, Representative Flores. You've been very patient, and I know that was rushed, and we will talk to the committee and see if we have some consideration to move forward.
Thank you very much.
With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3142, and I'm going to close the House Education Committee Subcommittee on Education Innovation. Thank you.